Coming up on Fronteras, some geologists are questioning the age of the Grand Canyon.
Even as a world-class landform that just about anybody on the planet can recognize for what it is, we still don't fully know how or when it formed. And for me as a geologist, I keep wanting to understand the Grand Canyon, knowing that it's in some ways unknowable.
Trying to understand the Grand Canyon. Also, for one dancer in Phoenix who found out late in life about her Jewish heritage, the revelation has connected her to a musical tradition, if not a religious one.
I think it's clearly a DNA connection. I so believe that. I think people are drawn to things naturally because of some historic connection that they have.
Coming up, connecting to family history through music and dance. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among 7 public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its Local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Mexico's new president, Enrique Peña Nieto, met with business leaders in Tijuana. From our Fronteras desk, Jill Replegal tells us he got a long wish list.
Energy and transportation were main concerns, says David Mayagoitia. He heads the Tijuana Economic Development Corporation. He says the president heard complaints about high electricity tariffs. Businesses in Baja California pay more for their electricity than those in other parts of Mexico because the state is not connected to the national grid. Another concern was the lack of a rail line connecting Tijuana with San Diego. Mayagoitia says this would help attract automobile manufacturing to the region. Finally, he hopes Peña Nieto's administration will make progress on establishing a commercial enterprise zone in the Tijuana border region. Business leaders hope this would make Tijuana more competitive through reduced tariffs and support for commercial innovation. Mayagoitia says he was impressed with the president's visit.
He didn't come here to give anything away. He came here to listen. So, you know, I think that speaks well of the president, right? It's the first time one of them has done that. But okay, I'll listen to everything you want.
Also, while in Tijuana, Peña Nieto inaugurated a music school. The school plans to form youth orchestras in low-income neighborhoods. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replegal.
The United States Supreme Court has agreed to rule on 2 challenges to federal and state laws that define marriage as a union between a man and a woman. In the U.S., support for gay marriage among Latinos is growing rapidly. That's according to survey data collected by the Pew Hispanic Center. But as Veronica Saragovia reports from Las Vegas, many young gay and lesbian Latinos are still struggling to find acceptance.
Leo Murrieta's parents were evangelical missionaries from Mexico when they came to Las Vegas with their children in 1986. Murrieta was a newborn then. It wasn't until he was in his early 20s that he told his mother he was gay.
She told me a story of my childbirth. She had to struggle during delivering me, and she told me that essentially it was a wasted effort.
Murrieta says it was hard to hear that his mother regretted giving birth to him. After that conversation, he says they didn't talk to each other, and he also felt unwelcomed at his church.
I had the 6 most difficult months of my life because those 6 months of my life I spent contemplating suicide every day because my life was so different.
Though she's never embraced his homosexuality, Murrieta says she's shifting her political views.
She's never apologized for what she said. She's kind of come full circle on it. She even supports LGBT right to marry. But it was a long process from 2009, where my mother was, and now 2012, where my mother is now.
The last decade has marked a rapid transition in views towards homosexuality in the Latino community. The Pew report shows that approval of legalizing gay marriage has jumped more than 20% in the last 6 years. Mark Hugo Lopez is an associate director of the Pew Hispanic Center.
That is a significant jump. That's a reversal of the opinions that Latinos had back in 2006.
Lopez says first-generation Latino immigrants may be adhering to more conservative and religious views. The younger generation, many second-generation immigrants, feel differently.
We find that, for example, among immigrant Hispanic adults, half of them, 53%, say that homosexuality should be accepted by society. But when you take a look at second-generation or higher Latinos, about two-thirds say that homosexuality should be accepted by society.
My girlfriend in seventh grade, and my parents had found a love note.
Fatima Medina, a student at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, is talking freely with peers about being Latino and being gay. They're all part of a decades-old college group called MECHA, or Chicano Student Movement. It traces its origins back to the civil rights movement of the 60s, and now fighting homophobia among its causes.
With me, I feel more comfortable talking to my mom about kind of this kind of stuff than I do to my dad.
20-year-old Jose Garcia is part of the MECHA group. He has a good relationship with his mother.
She's like, I really support you and I love you, but I feel that she's not fully there yet because she's not comfortable with talking to the people about it, or even in certain spaces she won't necessarily talk to me about it.
A sizable minority of the Latino community remains opposed to open homosexuality, and that resistance is especially prominent among religious Latinos. 37-year-old Jesus Marquez has a cousin who is lesbian.
We love her 100%, but we don't love her actions. Obviously, she sees that we in our family, we try to read the Bible a lot, we go to church. So that's why she decides to do her gay activities away from us.
Still, young Latinos like Jose Garcia and his peers make up a substantial and growing portion of the Latino population. According to Pew Hispanic Center, Latinos are the nation's youngest ethnic group. Pew's Mark Hugo Lopez says that in itself may account for the rapid change in views about homosexuality and gay marriage.
Because the Hispanic population is much younger, that may be playing a larger role in driving some of these changes that we see in attitudes among Latinos towards gay marriage.
The changing attitudes among Latinos on homosexuality and gay marriage reflect the changing attitudes across the U.S. as a whole. And with 50,000 young Latinos turning 18 each month, acceptance of homosexuality is likely to grow more widespread in the next decade. In Las Vegas, I'm Veronica Zaragovia.
Christmas is around the corner and Hanukkah is underway. The holiday season can prompt reflections on faith and cultural identity. For one dancer in the Phoenix area, the revelation of her Jewish heritage late in life has connected her to a musical tradition, if not a religious one. From the Fronteras desk, Jude Jaffe Block reports.
When Linda Machado was growing up in New York in the 1950s and 60s, she thought she knew her family history. Her dad was Irish. Her mother's family was Portuguese from the Azores Islands.
I grew up religiously Episcopalian. I was one of the only kids in the neighborhood that looked Hispanic.
But as an adult, Machado's mother, Elvira, revealed a family secret that would complicate Machado's already multicultural identity.
One day, I guess I was in my 40s, and my mom said to me, "You know, Linda, my dad used to say, Elvira, shh, don't tell anyone, but we're really Jewish." And I looked at her, I said, "What?"
It turned out her mother's family were Jews in southern Portugal and were part of the Sephardic Jewish tradition. When Jews were expelled from Portugal at the end of the 15th century, the family fled to the Azores. At a time when it was forbidden to practice Judaism, they passed down some customs in secret.
And then she started telling me the stories about other family members that would get together, and they would always be doing these things in secret, and nobody understood what. And from what she told me, it sounds like there were rituals around the holiday times. So I was stunned.
That conversation with her mother was about 15 years ago. And at age 62, Machado is still processing this revelation of her Sephardic Jewish roots.
I want to explore first the cultural connection with myself and the heritage. And then I just see a natural segue into learning about the religious aspect.
And the way she's connecting to Jewish culture is through music. Machado had already begun to dance flamenco in her 40s, but as she explored the art further, she learned it uniquely spoke to her Sephardic roots in the Iberian Peninsula.
A large part of flamenco is a blending of the Arabic culture, the Gypsy culture, the Spanish, the Jewish.
And those Jewish influences are the strands that most resonate with Machado today. Tucked behind her home in Tempe is a studio where she and her husband Ricardo de Cristobal have a flamenco school. She teaches dance, he teaches guitar, and they also perform together. She spins and stomps, wearing all black, and her dark hair pulled back. This is one of her favorite flamenco melodies, Petaneras. It's an ancient tune that some believe originated as a Sephardic Jewish song when Jews were still allowed to live openly in Spain.
Some of the lyrics are about her and a boyfriend going to the synagogue and things of that nature.
She also discovered musicians like the Israeli performer Yasmin Levy, who are popularizing lyrics in Ladino, a dialect of Spanish spoken by the Jews who were exiled from Spain. Como la rosa en la huerta. It's music which Machado finds haunting.
I just can't listen to the music enough. When you turn it off, it's like you unplug my cord.
The knowledge of her own Jewish heritage has given her a sense of belonging in this musical tradition.
I think it's clearly a DNA connection. I so believe that. I think people are drawn to things naturally because of some historic connection that they have. It's in me, and I can't ignore it.
In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. Some geologists are questioning the age of the Grand Canyon.
Even as a world-class landform that just about anybody on the planet can recognize for what it is, we still don't fully know how or when it formed. And for me as a geologist, I keep wanting to understand the Grand Canyon, knowing that it's in some ways unknowable.
That story next. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Last month, geologists published a paper in the journal Science that concluded the Grand Canyon, or at least part of it, is much older than most researchers think. The study reopened a contentious debate among scientists, and it got reporter Laurel Morales thinking about the magnitude of the Grand Canyon's history. On a recent, crisp, and perfectly silent evening, she takes us to the canyon's south rim to walk the Trail of Time, a path that encourages visitors to ponder the mystery.
Well, shall we walk it?
Sure. Can you feel yourself going back in time as you walk?
I'm not feeling any younger. Oh, there's a nice viewpoint.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I think every time I come here, it's like the first time.
Would you mind introducing yourself?
Oh, yeah. My name is Wayne Ranney, and I'm a geologist, author, and trail guide here in northern Arizona. And I've been living at the Grand Canyon area for 37 years.
What keeps you coming back?
Well, I think what keeps me coming back to the Grand Canyon, even as a world-class landform that just about anybody on the planet can recognize for what it is, we still don't fully know how or when it formed. And for me as a geologist, I keep wanting to understand the Grand Canyon, knowing that it's in some ways unknowable. And all of the erosion that's gone on here has helped to keep it in its mysterious state. The erosion takes away the evidence for how it could have formed. And so in some ways, the grander the canyon gets, the less we can know about it, because there's less things on the landscape to study.
I'm Sabrina Rosa from Belgium.
My name is Martijn Bruinsma from the Netherlands. You go.
Speak English better than me, I
That's
guess.
That's not true.
What do you think about when you look at it?
I think about how small we are, I guess. Just how you know, my life just a few years, and this has been around for millions of years, and just, you know.
It looks amazing, and yeah, definitely makes me feel small as well. Gives me lots of inspiration, I guess, about life.
The debate that is going on amongst geologists, it could be as old as 70 million years or as young as 5 or 6 million years. And you think, for something as well-regarded and well-known as the Grand Canyon, why these range of ages? Why can't we pinpoint it anymore? And it just speaks volumes to the many different processes that have been acting to create it. And so I kind of liken this story of how old the Grand Canyon might be to the parable of the six blind men who are describing the elephant. And one of them is touching the trunk and describing that. Another is touching the tusks. And each blind man is describing a certain part of that elephant. They're not incorrect in their description, but what we can say is they're incomplete in their description. And based on what part of the Grand Canyon's history you want to highlight, or any researcher might want to highlight, they could come up with a story that shows it to be a young feature, which would be the 6-million-year-old date, or an old feature, which would be the 70-million-year-old date.
Do you think we'll ever solve the mystery of the Grand Canyon, that we'll ever find the truth with a capital T?
Gosh, I hope not, because living with this mystery in many ways has just been such an exciting ride. I don't think there's going to be any gravel or other deposit that's going to be found. I mean, we've been studying this for 150 years. Hundreds of geologists have scoured the landscape. But if I were a betting man, what I would say is that we're going to find evidence that the Grand Canyon is old and is young. It just depends which part of the equation you want to emphasize.
Kind of back to the elephant.
Yeah, kind of back to the elephant.
Laurel Morales reported that piece from the Grand Canyon. Among those celebrating the Jewish holiday Chanukah in Phoenix will be a small number of Hispanics who didn't grow up with the tradition. From the Fronteras desk, Jude Jaffe Block reports they're returning to what they say is their Jewish heritage.
Yosef Garcia grew up Catholic in Panama. He was an altar boy in his town's church. Back then, for him, the winter holidays meant Christmas.
As the altar boy, you would always be standing with the priest and doing all the pouring of the wine and washing the priest's hands.
But outside of church and all throughout the year, Garcia noticed a more mysterious set of family rituals.
Every Friday night, my grandmother would light candles. She would be saying these words, and I didn't know what she was saying.
She was reciting the Hebrew blessings for Shabbat, the Jewish Sabbath, but Garcia didn't realize that until he was in his 30s. That's when his great uncle revealed the family descended from Jews who fled Spain centuries ago, when Jews were told they must convert to Catholicism or leave. The Spanish Inquisition followed them to the New World, so those who wanted to preserve Jewish traditions had to do so in secret.
You could have knocked me over with a feather. I was in shock. I didn't know what to do.
In the past few decades, a growing number of people in the Southwest have come forward with stories of secret Jewish ancestry. In Garcia's case, the revelation prompted him to become a rabbi, and he now wears a long gray beard and tzitzis, tassels that hang at his waist. He moved to a Phoenix suburb 7 years ago and runs an organization that helps other so-called crypto-Jews reconnect to Judaism. This holiday, he'll host his local following, about a dozen people, at his home to light the Hanukkah candles.
To me, celebrating the Jewish holidays is a breath of fresh air, that I'm able to help other people, other Hispanics, who want to celebrate these festivals of God.
Among those he's helping is a 35-year-old Mexican immigrant named Pablo Garcia Perez, who, despite the shared last name, is no relation. When Garcia Perez was growing up, his family identified as Jewish, but they lived in a rural village and didn't have a way to practice their faith.
que no había una comunidad cerca de judíos.
There wasn't a Jewish community nearby, so there wasn't a lot of information. All we had were just some basic books, and that was it.
Garcia Perez immigrated to the Phoenix area as a young man and began attending synagogue. 3 years ago, he completed a certificate of return to Judaism under Rabbi Garcia's guidance. Now in his apartment, he has a collection of all the Jewish items he never had growing up. He shows off a shelf with a Hanukkah menorah, traditional candlesticks for Shabbat, Jewish texts translated into Spanish, and a Spanish-Hebrew dictionary because he's learning Hebrew. But how to determine who should be recognized as a Jew today is a subject of debate, and academics have their own arguments over the authenticity of these family stories.
And that's one of the wonderful things I think about this history, is it invites controversy, it invites complexity, and honestly, that's what it's about.
Roger Luis Martinez Davila is a historian at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. He says centuries-old genealogy records were often falsified, making it difficult for modern-day researchers to trace Spanish-Jewish lineage. He's working on a future museum exhibit on crypto-Jews in Santa Fe, but finding artifacts from this hidden past is tough.
We often kid with ourselves, wouldn't it be just great if we finally met that person that said, you know, I just dug up this Torah scroll that was been in the backyard for like 200 years.
But it appears those kinds of artifacts don't exist in the new world.
And there's a good reason. If you had that type of artifact on your person or in your family with an Inquisition around, that was certainly a death sentence.
Last month, the Spanish government announced it will ease the citizenship process for those who can prove they're descendants of Jews who were expelled from Spain. Rabbi Yosef Garcia applauds the recognition, but in his opinion,
we're not really interested in going back to Spain. We're more interested in going back to Israel.
And gaining acceptance among the broader Jewish community. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Blanc.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Kekwak. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.